On today's episode of the DFA Podcast, we talk about two AL East teams adding starting pitchers and a bunch of non-roster invitees. It's the DFA Podcast. It's coming at you right now.
To episode 51 of the DFA Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me again is RJ Anderson, my co-host. How are you doing on this Friday?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. We got some stuff to talk about. It's not no JD Martinez, no Eric Hosmer, no Mike Moustakas yet, but we at least have a couple of dudes to talk about who have signed real major league free agent contracts. We got some minor league guys to talk about as well. We have a hole in my heart where Jeff Manship once was, but we'll get into all of this stuff a little bit later in the show. But I think we should start things off with a couple of free agent pitcher signings. So Yu Darvish comes off the board, and now all of a sudden some of the lower tier starting pitchers are coming off the board. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Alrighty, let's do it.
So the two moves are both in the American League East. Both two different American League East teams have signed a brand spanking new, very exciting starting pitcher to help fill out their rotation depth. The first one we'll mention is Andrew Cashner. On a previous episode of the show, Sean Brody and Craig Goldstein and I talked about, what are the most Orioles pitchers who haven't pitched for the Orioles? And sure enough, Cashner is the guy that came up, and now he's an Oriole. He has completed the circle. We are accurate in our projection that Andrew Cashner would eventually become an Oriole. Cashner signed a two-year, $20 million deal with the Orioles to, I don't know, ostensibly be the team's third starter, it sounds like.
Yeah, and the funny thing is everyone knows that Cashner is unlikely to repeat last season's performance from an ERA perspective because he doesn't really strike anyone out. Also, it doesn't have pinpoint control or anything like that. And yet, it seemed like anyone the Orioles signed was going to be an upgrade over what they got last season, because if you looked at the numbers produced by Jeremy Hellickson, Ubaldo Jimenez, Chris Tillman, and Wade Miley, it was like 440 innings of 6.6 ERA ball. You know, Cashner, even if he regresses, I mean, his career worst ERA is 5.25. And, you know, he's kind of interesting to me in a sense because when you watch him pitch, and I only watched one or two starts, you know, he throws a mid-90s fastball with some arm side run. He has some command. He also introduced the cutter, at least the classification is called a cutter last season, and he got more than 65% ground balls on the balls that were in play on that pitch. So I guess the interesting thing for me is, will the Orioles embrace the cutter? Because as we know in the past, they really have kind of shied away from the cutter. And if they do, maybe Cashner can become more of an extreme ground ball guy, and maybe that'll change how we view him. Because right now, I think everyone, as I mentioned in an introduction, kind of views him as someone who it's frankly a house of cards when it comes to his ERA and some of his surface level statistics.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that there is some room for him to improve upon last year based on the cutter, which I think the Orioles might be a little bit more open to the cutter in Cashner's case, because it seems like most of their organizational philosophy against the cutter was more about developing young pitchers and less about guys that they sign in free agency. But I suppose that kind of remains to be seen a little bit as well. You mentioned briefly that Cashner doesn't really strike anybody out. That's kind of underselling it. This is a guy who struck out 4.6 batters per nine last year. The only pitcher who posted, you know, anywhere near that many innings and was below him in terms of a strikeout rate was Ty Block of the Giants. So this is not what you would consider like outrageously good company.
No.
I do see there's some possibility for him to regress a little bit in a more positive way, where it seems almost unlikely that he'll strike out that few batters again. In the past, he's always struck out at least a few more than that. He's never been a strikeout artist, which is kind of weird given the way that he came into the league and was really kind of projected as one of those guys who could be a number two starter because he had strikeout stuff, but it's never translated. The guy I always think of when I think of pitchers like this with like really hot fastballs and good stuff, but then are unable to convert it into strikeouts is like Brad Penny. He's one of those types of guys. So he's become this ground ball pitcher. If you're going to be a ground ball pitcher, playing in front of Manny Machado and Tim Beckham at third base is probably pretty decent. I would be kind of excited about that. The thing about Cashner, though, is that his record over the last few years, in terms of peripherals, in terms of DRA, in terms of like all these other things, really paint the picture of a guy who is no better than like a number four, number five starter. That's kind of his upside, I think, as a number four starter. What do you kind of see that as?
I agree with that, but I would just say for the Baltimore Orioles, a number four starter is a huge upgrade still. I mean, a few years ago, they were able to reach the postseason multiple times because they had rotations full of number four starters and they leveraged their lineup and their bullpen to get to October. And I wanted to bring up one more thing about Cashner strikeouts and all because I noticed it when I was watching him last night and I looked it up and the statistics backed it up. When he does strike someone out, there's a lot of strikeouts looking. Like he, gets those freeze ball where he places a fastball right at the edge of his zone. And I looked up a number and it was 40% last season. Entering the year, his career rate was 30%, or excuse me, not entering the year. Even with last year, his career rate is 30%, and the league average during his career has been 24%. So I don't know if that's going to continue. I think we both kind of hinted that he could change his pitch selection a little bit and perhaps get better results. And the other thing I noticed, and just keep in mind, like Cashner is one of the two, maybe three worst evaluative mistakes I've ever made because there was a point where I thought he was the better bet to be a good player than Anthony Rizzo, or at least I thought he'd be more productive than Anthony Rizzo, and that has aged. That has not aged well,
No, it
but
has not.
his off-speed stuff is just not good anymore. I mean, he kept throwing, his breaking balls, and there was no. I mean, either they'd back up on him or there was just no incentive for the batter or no reason for the batter to swing and miss. And that lack of an out pitch, I think, is what has really cost him. And I don't know if he's going to develop one. It seems like that would not happen at this point in his career. But, he's going to go out there, throw a lot of mid-90s fastballs, and it'll be interesting to see, like I said, if he can maybe develop into more of a ground ball pitcher. Or if they teach him how to use his four-seamer up in the zone, I don't know. I doubt it. Again, he's at the point where he probably is what he is, but he's still an upgrade.
Yeah, I think that's true. He probably boots one of Mike Wright or Miguel Castro from the Orioles rotation, which is almost assuredly a very good thing. He immediately slots in as like the number three behind Bundy and Gausman, which is an upgrade. Now, you mentioned that the Orioles were really good before because they had a great offense and they had a great bullpen and they could survive with some number four starters. I don't think that's the case this year. I don't think they have a good enough bullpen to offset their kind of middling starting rotation, if you want to be nice about it. The offense still looks good to me, especially if Austin Hayes has a good debut season. It still looks like a pretty scary lineup from top to bottom. But Zach Britton is still on the disabled list and will be to start the season after his Achilles issue. Now you're really relying pretty much more heavily on Brock Givens and Darren O'Day, who are all very good relief pitchers, but still not the kind of blow you out bullpen that I think they might really need to make this work from a let's get to the wild card kind of perspective.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Although, the thing about the Orioles is it seems like they produce a random arm or two, or they used to anyway, who would come in and all of a sudden, they'd be putting out pretty good numbers. And I don't know if that's going to happen this year. It doesn't seem like they have any obvious candidates to me. But, we're not really talking about them as necessarily being a favorite for the second wild card position at this point. We're just talking about have they done enough to get into contention for that second wild card. And I guess what I would say more so than the bullpen is I think they should still go and get Cobb or Lynn. And, whether they're willing to do that or not, I don't know. I don't know what their budget looks like or anything like that. But I think that should be the next move. And if they do that, I don't know. I mean, that second wild card seems like it's going to be wide open again. I know right now Pecota is very low on the Orioles, but it's always low on the Orioles because it
Right.
doesn't necessarily gauge relief pitching or bullpen first approaches very well. So I don't know. I would like to see them do a little bit more before the season begins, and I don't know how likely that is.
Yeah, from my perspective, I see the second wild card. I kind of in my head mentally check the Red Sox for the first wild card position, and then so the second wild card is usually, some sort of amalgamation of, well, could it be the Rays if you believe in Pecota? Could it be
Nope.
the Royals if you don't?
Nope.
but then you look at the real contenders to me look like, okay, the Twins are a legitimate contender for that second wild card. I think out in the West, you have to at least be looking at the Angels and maybe the Mariners. I don't really know without their pitching, the way their pitching situation is right now, if they can really be there. But the Angels to me seem like the strongest contender for that second wild card spot, and then the Twins. And then you got the Orioles. I'd say several steps behind. The other team on the East side that's bird related, that's also added a new starting pitcher, is the Blue Jays. They've added Jaime Garcia on a 1-year, $8 million deal to shore up their bullpen. So, like Cashner, he's a ground ball pitcher. Like Cashner, he's well traveled over the last couple of seasons, but he drew a substantially smaller contract, if you ask me. 1 year and $8 million for Jaime Garcia seems very different than 2 years and $20 million for Andrew Cashner, from my opinion. I want to know what you think about this deal for Garcia and what his performance are, and then a little bit after that, we'll talk a little bit about the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised at the difference in cost because, like you said, they seem fairly similar in that they're both probably here to fill a number four role for an American League East team. And yeah, I really don't know how to explain that other than maybe Garcia's medicals are worse, or maybe it just comes down to the almighty ERA. And Cashner has Garcia beat in that department, albeit probably not by as much as you would think based on the difference in contracts and cost. I don't know. I will say it's kind of funny because a few days ago I was doing a radio hit in Toronto and I fully expected them to ask about the Blue Jays rotation. And I went to Roster Resource to make sure I knew who was slotted in as the number five starter. And I had never heard of him before, which is probably not a good sign. I mean, you want to guess who was slotted in as the number five starter?
Oh, is it the guy from last year? I can't remember his name. Used to be in the military.
No. But that's a good guess, but no, that's Chris
Yeah,
Rolley.
my good guess was that literally I could not come up with the guy's name. No, who was it?
I thought you were going to say Taylor Guerrero, but no, it was actually Ryan Borucki,
Yeah, no,
who
that's not happening, dude.
he's a top 10 prospect in their farm system per BA and BP. So I had not heard of him, and that did not reflect well upon me. And of course, they didn't actually ask about the rotation at all, so I was safe. But
Oh, good. Good
My
for you.
answer would have been they should go get a veteran starter, and Jaime Garcia fits perfectly. I
Yeah,
don't know, maybe I'm soft on Jaime, but I think this is perfectly good signing.
I'm really happy with it from the Blue Jays' perspective. I'm not sure I love their strategy of getting a guy who is such a ground ball starting pitcher, just simply because I don't think the team is well constructed to deal with a ground ball lefty. When your defensive profile is Troy Tulowitzki, who's not the same defensive player that he used to be. Also, he's very badly injured. Second base is maybe going to be Devin Travis, but you might see Steve Pierce there a little bit. Josh Donaldson's great, but their infield defense isn't great, and you play on turf. That's not a great setup for a ground ball pitcher, especially when this team has what I would consider a really strong defensive outfield. So then again, you're playing in Toronto and balls can tend to get out of the park in a hurry, so I get trying to mitigate that to some extent. But the main thing I see here is that this is actually a really pretty good fourth starter that you're able to get on a 1-year contract for $8 million. You jump on that, even if your team is maybe not really in consideration for that second wild card right now. This is the type of move that you would make in a vacuum to make your team more competitive no matter what. Garcia's projected by Pecota to be almost worth two wins next year. At $8 million, that's an absolute bargain. And you're right, the medicals might be a little bit weird, but two teams traded for him last year, and they must have looked at the medicals and seen, well, this is okay enough. You know, the Yankees and the Twins, both two teams in contention at the time, thought that his medicals were good enough to accept a trade for him. So unless something has really kind of gone backwards since then, which I don't see, I would kind of be okay with this because Garcia's got a history of good performance. When he is healthy, he tends to be, you know, pretty much between a win and three wins as a starting pitcher. You bring that guy in, you know, I would say 7 days a week.
I agree with that. I would just note, though, we're talking about the Blue Jays and ground ball heavy starters. Well, I mean, Marcus Stroman, I know he's a righty, but he's pretty ground ball heavy, and he obviously is coming off a good year there. And I don't know. I guess the other point I would make here about Garcia is that while he is an injury risk, they probably needed another arm anyway, because who knows what Aaron Sanchez is going to give them at this
Right.
point. And I think his health is going to go a long way in determining whether they're actually in the running for that second wild card or not. Because if he's out and they have to dig into the rotation depth again, well, I don't really know. I mean, obviously, I didn't know who Ryan Barucci was until a couple nights ago. So we'll see. I will say that I did appreciate that the Blue Jays went out there and added some infield depth this offseason, whether you want to call Solarte their backup shortstop or second baseman. They also added Diaz, and you mentioned Steve Pierce playing at second base. And as bad as that is probably defensively, if that's your fourth option at second base or your third option, depending on where you rank Diaz in there, that's a pretty good third or fourth option. So
Yeah, I honestly, Solarte had slipped my mind, so I feel silly about that because Solarte is good. He's not what I would consider a great defensive second baseman. I'd be much more comfortable with him at third, but he is a legitimate option. And with Solarte and Travis and Aledmys Diaz does not do anything for me at this point. I would be shocked if he's really a factor because I just don't buy his offense at this point, and he's certainly not a good enough defender to really be plus plus as the backup shortstop. But they need a backup shortstop. They need a backup shortstop very, very badly because Troy Tulowitzki's health is so sketchy at this point. But you're right, they do have talent. It's not top tier talent, but they've got a couple of second division starters at that position.
And I just want to quiz you on their bullpen real quick, because that was another
Oh.
area where, okay, so Osuna,
Right. Aaron
Nakamura.
Loop should still be in there, right? Aaron Loop, who, by the way, is the longest tenured member of the Blue Jays. Little fun fact there.
That is a quite the fun fact, actually.
I did an article on Baseball Prospectus about the longest tenured players for every team, and again, it's kind of shocking that Aaron Loop would be the longest tenured Blue Jay, but unless Jose Bautista comes back unexpectedly, that's what we got. So Ryan Tepera, I always remember his name.
You
And
got three names. You got four to go.
yeah, I think I'm gonna have four to go for a while.
All
I'm
right.
having a lot of trouble trying to come up with anybody else.
Let me give you one. This is probably the most successful of the remaining pitchers there. Joe Biagiani.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I should have known that. He was wasn't he in the rotation for a little while last year, and he's been
He
okay.
was. He was their Rule 5 pick a couple years back, who was surprisingly good. Then last year, he spent not quite half the season in the rotation, and he posted an ERA beginning with a 5 and allowed more than a home run per 9, kind of dashing the hopes of him being a serviceable starter, I think. But just to list the rest of them real
Wait, I
quick.
just
Oh, go ahead.
remembered another one. John Axford. They signed him this offseason.
They did, but he is not among the 7 who I'm thinking about.
Oh,
But
okay.
he could very well slot in. But the other three, just to name them real quick: Carlos Ramirez, Danny Barnes, Matt Dimardi.
Yeah, that's not great. Like even Ryan Tepera is not that great. You know, Biagini's okay. That's a pretty dark group.
Yeah, but on the bright side, if you look at their non-roster invitees, you have John Axford, who you just mentioned, Al Albuquerque, Craig Breslow, Jake Patrica, Reiner Cruz for you Rule 5 and way, way, way old Astro fans. And I suppose that's the only other one you're going to know. But yeah, so this is an interesting looking bullpen, and probably not interesting in the good way. So they should probably consider going out there and adding another reliever, at
Yeah,
least one of a reliever.
I mean, I maybe it's just the name value or the fact that these are some of these guys are guys that I've liked in the past, but the ones that we couldn't name, and I have already slipped out of my head for who are currently structured in the bullpen, I could very easily see guys like Axford and Breslow and Petrica take those spots as non-roster invitees and kick the other guys back down to AAA for a little bit.
Yep.
So those are our two big moves. There have been a couple of other free agent signings in the major league level. There have been a couple of other free agent signings on the minor league level. We'll go through a few of those really quickly. I would think the first one that we should talk about in terms of importance is probably staying in the American League East is the Red Sox inking Eduardo Nunez to a one-year deal. We don't have the dollar amount yet at this time. It's a reported agreement, but I think that there's been a lot of talk about the Red Sox wanting to make absolutely sure that his medicals are, well, not good, but acceptable, with all of the knee injuries that he had last year. So it's hard to judge this deal on value because we don't know how much they're actually going to be paying Nunez this year. But Nunez is a guy that I think you and I both saw as a relatively desirable free agent this offseason. I want to know what you think of the move.
Yeah, I mean, he's an old school style player. And what I mean by that is he doesn't walk, he doesn't bop, doesn't really even play defense, but he puts the ball in play and leverages his speed. And over the last 3 seasons, he's been a league average or better hitter in each of them. And, in theory, he can move around a little bit. Like, you might not want to play him at an important defensive position. He might not be above average or average at any of them. However, I think there's room for this guy. And they might have him in a reserve role where he. Maybe he starts the season at second base if Pedroia misses time. Maybe he slides over to third base if Devers has proven that
If
he's not quite
Pedroia misses
ready.
time, you're killing me over here.
But he's a good base stealer. So even then, you have a chance to use him, leverage him in a way that can help your team in situational baseball. So I think this is, I'm assuming they didn't pay him the earth and the moon and everything around it because they don't seem willing to do that for JD Martinez even. So I'm expecting like, maybe 8 million per year, something like that. That might be on the high end too. I don't know. I really don't know what he's going to get, but I feel like it's not going to be a ton, and I think that he's going to be a perfectly fine signing for them.
Yeah, I actually really like it because, and part of that is what you mentioned with Dustin Pedroia. I have very little faith that Dustin Pedroia is going to be healthy to start the season, healthy to finish the season, healthy in the middle of the season. So I think that this is a team that desperately needed to have a reliable backup plan at second base. Now, Eduardo Nunez may not be healthy to start the season, may not be healthy at the end of the season, but at least he gives them another impactful player behind them. Some people are really into Marco Hernandez. Some folks are really into, there's a younger player that they've got at AAA who I saw a couple of times. Who is the name's escaping me? Zhu-Wei Lin. Some
Yeah.
people are really into him as a possible second base fit. I would much rather have Eduardo Nunez as a backup second baseman slash utility player, kind of in the mold of what the team has done with Brock Holt in the past couple of years, except Brock Holt's not very good anymore, and Eduardo Nunez still is very good when he's on the field. So I really like that move for them. In addition to that, he's a right-handed hitter. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Pedroia does come back, he could very well be the other side of a platoon with Mitch Moreland at first base, give his knee a little bit of a break. He can fill in, like you said, for Devers, for Benintendi in the outfield, for all sorts of positions. So he's the right type of versatile for this team, and I think he's an upgrade over, some of these other bench guys that they would have, like Hernandez or Holt or Lynn.
Or Marrera, who was probably going to start the season as their second baseman if they didn't add anyone. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's not an ideal situation. So I like the move.
Yep. I have no issue with it.
I really kind of was surprised though. I thought that they would go with their in-house options and maybe not spend the money on him because, okay, so let's just assume this is a $5 million deal or something like it. Somewhere between 5 and 8 million, which I think is a fair assumption given his medical history and given his level of performance. I would pay him that much if I were almost any team. But it's another key clue, just like you said, that this is not a team that's going to go out and get JD Martinez, right?
Doesn't seem like it at this point, does it?
Yeah, I don't think it is. And With the Red Sox maybe being out on Martinez, I do not know where this dude is going to end up.
Has to be Arizona.
It seems like Arizona's the best fit because right now Arizona's talking about using Yasmani Tomas every day in the outfield. And if you have the opportunity to use Yasmani Tomas every day in the outfield or JD Martinez every day in the outfield, you don't really have the luxury tax issues that other teams have. Yeah, it's a lot of money to commit to a guy who could very well fall off at the end of a 5 or 6 year contract, but man, that really would put them, I think, as the front runners for the wild card in the National League, or at least, at the top of the discussion for that. And I'm just having a lot of trouble seeing where else he would fit at this point.
It would almost have to be one of these teams who, just crave an opportunist. I mean, I hate to throw the Oakland A's in there because I don't think they're ever going to do this, but that's what the A's used to do, right? They would just kind of take advantage of a situation if it presented itself. Why wouldn't they try to get Martinez on a, maybe a short-term deal of a higher annual average? Could you imagine that lineup if they added Martinez? I mean, it's not going to happen. Like, there's no chance that's going to happen. I'm just thinking like a team that kind of comes out of nowhere, splurges on him, and shoot, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to come from if it doesn't come from Arizona, and I don't know that it'll be anytime soon if it doesn't come from Arizona. Because, I mean, the Mariners, would they?
I
I don't
don't
know if
know
they'd
if
do
they
it.
could afford him. The other team that seems like it could be a dark horse type of fit might be St. Louis.
Yeah.
If there's some weird situation where Eric Hosmer signs with the Padres, maybe the Royals would be interested in bringing Martinez in, but it seems like a weird decision to make to be like, well, we'll let Hosmer walk and we'll lose him, but we'll build for today by signing a JD Martinez. So, yeah, I'm just again, this offseason's so weird, man. I just don't know what to make of it.
I will say, I hope that someone who is really into Jose Martinez writes a piece about how his barrel rate last season suggests they don't even need JD Martinez because they
Oh,
already have a good Martinez.
you're gonna make me throw up in my mouth a little bit. I hate this.
Speaking of which, let's move on to one of the most popular players in the majors, Chase Utley, who signed a 2-year, $2 million deal to return to the Dodgers. I don't think there's a whole lot to say on this one. He's probably going to reprise his role as a guy who only plays against right-handers, who gives you about league average production, and who is going to annoy the daylights out of basically every team whom he has not employed.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely accurate. I was surprised to go back and see how well Chase Utley hit last year. He hit, I shouldn't be, it's Chase Utley. But he was also in his age 38 season. It was better than average production for any player, let alone just a second baseman. Yeah, he only really plays against right-handed pitchers, but there's a lot of right-handed pitchers, and that's a pretty valuable piece. He signed with the Dodgers for 2 years, which I gotta be honest, I did not see coming. But the average annual value is $1 million per season. He's basically making just a hair over the major league minimum. So, good for the Dodgers in that respect. I'm kind of like surprised that, it seems like he took a smaller deal probably to stay with the Dodgers because he could have been a useful part for a lot of other teams. The thing is, like, once you get into your age 39 season, nobody stays good. Very few, I shouldn't say nobody, but very few players stay good. Pecota, looks at Utley's age in addition to his future performance, and they don't see him being any good at all next year. I do kind of worry that we're on the precipice of the cliff with Utley and that he could fall off at any moment. But if you only spend $2 million on him for 2 years, I mean, it's pretty easy to say, okay, we'll release him and move on.
Well, this is an Andrew Friedman team, so they would absolutely not release him. Excuse me. You know what they would do? They'd be like, "Hey, Chase, doesn't your ankle feel a little sore
Oh, yeah,
today?" And
yeah.
then they put him on the 60-day DL, and he would retire during the offseason and take a comfy front office job with him that probably pays him that second $1 million.
Yeah, that's a
So
good
that's
point.
my expectation there. Yeah, I don't know. Old second basemen are not supposed to be worth having at all. I mean, it used to be, a second baseman got to his 30s, his mid-30s, and it was like, all right, cut bait. Nothing good is coming from there. I will say that maybe because of how Dave Roberts employs him, where it's really that specialized only against righties role, that maybe he's able to remain a little bit more productive than we anticipate, but I wouldn't really place a bet on either way. I will place a bet that he does not see more than maybe 10% lefties, because Roberts was very good about that last year, limiting his exposure. So kudos to Roberts and kudos to Utley, I suppose, for chasing 2,000 career hits. And
Boo, boo, that pun.
hey, I just want to say that bench has Chase Utley and Matt Kemp on it. Imagine if this were 2008 and you were told that one team has Chase Utley and Matt Kemp on their bench.
They just cut Adrian Gonzalez. I mean, they basically just gave him away so that, an Adrian Gonzalez for Matt Kemp trade, 7 years ago would have blown people's minds. Now it's just. They just need to bring Andre Ethier back at this point to be the to be kind of like the fifth outfielder spot, and then you can get all the old guys together.
I mean, that's a dream of mine. I will note one other thing about the Dodgers, too. Utley was their second free agent signing of the winter. You remember who the first one was?
Well, I know that I think it's a minor league deal, but they did pick up Tom Kohler, the Dino.
That was the major league deal.
Oh, it was? Wow. Well,
Yes,
I
that
mean,
was it.
when you can stash everybody on your 10-day or your 60-day DL at will, then yeah, that's not a bad deal. I'm shocked that Kohler got a major league deal. I think it's probably a decent one, but yeah. Well, I mean, this is the big money Dodgers. You expect them to go out and get these impact free agents like Utley and Kohler.
Big game Tom. He looks like John Lackey, and that's about all he's got and going for him, I suppose. Well, that's not true. I used to like Tom Kohler. I think he'll find success in the bullpen for them. So,
Well, let's talk
oh.
about another starting pitcher on the West Coast who is getting a deal, but maybe not in the plans on a high level. Derek Holland signing a minor league deal with the San Francisco Giants.
How about that? Yeah, they really needed some rotation help. I think we talked about that last time. The back of that rotation looks horrible. We're of Stratton and Block, and Holland for a minute last year seemed like he was back on the right track.
Yes.
And then the rest of the year happened and everybody had forgotten that he existed. He walked five
Yes.
per nine, struck out like roughly seven per nine. He gave up more than two home runs per nine, gave up more than 10 hits per nine. His ERA plus was 69. A lot of people
Nice.
were going to make a lot of bad. Yeah, a lot of people just said a lot of, wow, that was regrettable to bring that up. But the point is, he was awful. And in the previous seasons, he hadn't necessarily produced a lot of innings, but his rate statistics have looked a fair amount better. And he feels like a very old 31-year-old at this point.
Oh man, does he ever? I like this move for the Giants. The Giants probably are not a team that, after their McCutcheon and Longoria acquisitions, are likely to spend a lot of money on a starting pitcher. So being aggressive with a guy who at least maybe has some upside for an NRI, not the worst deal I could think of. I'll be interested to see if they're the aggressors for Tim Lincecum after his showcase to kind of have another guy who probably isn't going to be terribly good, but at least there's a 15% chance that he could come back and do something interesting. And I think Holland's kind of in that same boat. But you're right, the 4 and 5 starters being Block and Stratton are not a good fit. This is the second time we've talked about Block on this show. It's possible that Tyler Beede is going to come up and be perfectly fine. A lot of times it's one of those things where the Giants bring one of these guys up and they acquit themselves okay to start, but it really doesn't turn out to be an effective everyday fifth starter or something like that. So I'll be interested to see how things kind of work out. But the front end of their rotation is so good that, and the additions that they've made on their lineup, I mean, their 1 through 8 lineup is probably one of the best in baseball right now, I would say. This is a team that's really interesting, and I really hope they're able to do something. If Holland and somebody else comes into this rotation and they use their old guy rebound magic to get some of these guys back to, even if it's just like 2014 form, I think that they're going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I agree with that, and I'll be tuning in. And I'd like to see that team do well because there are a lot of players on there who I really like, whether it's Longoria, Posey, McCutcheon. It's a likable team, right? I
Yeah,
don't.
Cueto. Cueto's very likable, I think.
Oh, Cueto. I mean, the Jason LeRoux incident is obviously not a great
No.
thing. But other than
That's a
that,
good
I mean,
point.
he's a joy to watch on the mound, you know, the tempo and the, I mean, it's like it's winter ball, and
That's very true.
I love pitchers who bring the winter ball vibe to regular season baseball, because we don't see it, we don't get to see it very often. So that's very good. And speaking of old guy rebound magic and former Giants, the Rays went out and made a few bullpen additions since we last talked, signing Sergio Romo to a big league deal and also adding Dustin McGowan on a minor league deal. Romo was actually very good for them after they picked him up in a trade. Much better, I think, than he had any right to be, given how poorly he had pitched for the Dodgers. McGowan, he had a good season 2 years ago. Wasn't very good last year with the Marlins, but in theory could provide them some length out of the bullpen if he were to make it. Still throws in the mid-90s, so he's got like at least two or three more contracts coming after this one, no matter what happens. I don't know. The Rays bullpen on paper still looks pretty bad to me, but at least they're trying at this point. And you throw those two into a bullpen, you probably add some Scribner. I know they added at least one other guy. Maybe Johnny Venters somehow breaks camp. That would be a great story. And I don't know. It's probably not going to be a good bullpen no matter what, but at least they're trying a little bit at this point.
I'm going to make a slightly bold prediction, and that is that Sergio Romo is the closer for the Rays by the end of the season.
I see. The thing is, I don't really consider that bold, because they have no other options. I mean,
Well,
are you going to
I
throw
mean,
Stanek out there, Alvarado? You're going to end up losing. You know what? If they're trying to tank, throwing one of those guys in there who has no idea where the ball is going is a good way to tank.
I guess that's true. I just always imagine that, first of all, even if somebody did really emerge out of this bullpen, first of all, this assumes that Alex Colomé is not long for this team. I think that if the Rays are anywhere near out of contention by the deadline, Alex Colomé moves to another deal and moves to another team in a trade. So that opens up the closer position. I think if the Rays do have somebody who really emerges, whether that's Alvarado or maybe who, or maybe one of the other guys who is kind of pushed into a bullpen role, the Rays are pretty likely to throw that guy in a setup role and not give him saves so that when arbitration time comes around, they can save some cash. And
They
Romo, they
would
don't have to worry
never,
about.
never, not the Rays.
Yeah, I
Jamie
know.
Schultz. Jamie Schultz would be another one I would mention, because he has big stuff, and he's already 27. Realistically, that's the kind of the funny thing about this. Like, they're so slow with their pitching development that by the time a guy like Schultz gets to the majors, he's 27, going on 28. You think of 3 years ahead, he's going to be 30 before he's arbitration eligible, most likely. Like, how many more years are you really going to want most relievers on your team? So it's kind of funny that they do that stuff. And I was thinking of Forrest Snow and Cody Hall and Dan Runsler when I was talking about
Oof.
other I mean, their NRI list is just amazing, and I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. Vidal Nuno,
You know who I hope is not the closer for this team when it comes to August, and I hope is in the rotation and pitching well, is Nathan Eovaldi. I am a Nathan Eovaldi stan. I am always out here advocating for more Nathan Eovaldi starts and more Nathan Eovaldi credit. He's coming back from a pretty substantial injury, though. It could be one of those things where he's not equipped to deal in the rotation, even if it's only going through the order twice, as the Rays are wont to do. But you imagine Odorizzi, if he doesn't move this offseason, which I still think is crazy that he hasn't, I mean, I would have to imagine he's gone by the deadline. Brent Honeywell is going to come up at some point, you would think, but I mean, I've been thinking that for a year. Who knows? There's going to be some holes in this rotation. You'd want Eovaldi to pick up one of those spots, but it could very well be something where you get shuffled down to the bullpen.
Yeah, and another name I'd throw into the closer mix, Jose De Leon. The problem is, I don't know if he's even a big league pitcher anymore. I don't know. Stuff backed up, and I don't know. That's not a great situation there. And yeah, I do think they're going to move Odorizzi. They have Matt and Andreas. They could slot into one of the starting spots. I don't think Colomé will even be there when the season opens, if we're being 100% honest.
Really?
I can still see St. Louis making a deal for him.
I mean, I could see a lot of teams being willing to make a deal for him, especially considering, the high-end closers are, with the exception of Greg Holland, are all off the market.
Yeah.
Greg Holland's a question mark. And no team is willing to sign other free agents, so why not make a deal? It seems like we're getting late in the game for the Rays to be dealing Colomé. But yeah, I mean, I was expecting him to be moved earlier in the offseason, so I guess that shouldn't change now that we're just pitchers and catchers are showing up.
I mean, look at this lineup though, Brian. Like, do you think they're realistically expecting to compete? I know Pekoda is high on them, but the thing about that is they use a system like Pekoda. So the same biases apply to them that would apply to Pekoda. Let me just list their lineup. I know we're getting ready to wrap this up, but their lineup is Denard, Span, Kiermaier, Souza, Dickerson, Ramos, Miller, Duffy, Wendell, and Echevarria. Maybe you throw Ryan Shemp in there. Their bench would be Jesus Sucre, Daniel Robertson, and Malik Smith, so not a bat to be seen. Their bullpen is Colomé, Andrew Kittredge, Romo, Dan Jennings, Chaz Rowe, Ryan Stanek, Jose Alvarado, and Andrés right now. And you can throw a guy like Shemp in there. You can throw a guy like maybe they allow one of their relievers who, you mentioned who, maybe Austin Pruitt breaks camp with them as a long man. That's not a good team. That's not going to win 84 games.
You're right. That is not a good team. However, the thing that I'll give the Rays credit for is they have four guys who I think are ready to step into the lineup or the rotation and make a difference this year. Whether they allow them to do that, I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But, you talk about Hechavarria at shortstop. Willy Adames is probably ready. You talk about Joey Wendell or somebody like that at second base. Christian Arroyo is ready. You talk about Denard Span playing left field. Jake Bowers is probably ready. And when you talk about that rotation, we've mentioned Brent Honeywell. Brent Honeywell is definitely ready. Whether or not the Rays are willing to bring all four of those guys up by June, whether or not they're willing to bring all four of them up at all this year. But I think all of a sudden, if you start working in those guys, then the bench automatically gets better, the lineup automatically gets better. You've got a better team. They're probably
I
not
will
winning 85 games, but I think that'll make them a better team.
No, I'll grant that, but I also think that's putting a lot of pressure on those guys too, because we have seen some young teams, the Yankees last year, for instance, where the youngsters come up and they hit the ground running and never look back. But I still have a lot of reservations about Arroyo just based on the idea that the Giants would trade a younger, basically big league ready third baseman for an older, supposedly declining third baseman. I don't know. I don't think the Giants think Arroyo is going to hit.
Well,
And I don't know if that's, I don't
maybe
know, but
that's
I'm
the case, but the Giants have a propensity and a, I won't say a, definitely an organizational philosophy, but they are much more willing to invest in veterans than they are to give young guys a shot, I think. I think that's
Is that
part of
true
it.
though? Because think about the core. They gave, Crawford and Belt and Posey. Those were all young guys. And you could even include Duffy. I mean, he wasn't necessarily hyped or anything. They gave him a shot. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that's the old Giants. I don't know if it's the current Giants so much anymore. But I could be mistaken.
But and then at the same time, you look at how many guys over the last couple of seasons have been ones that they've brought up on their own. It's not that many. I mean, Joe Panik was the last regular who was brought up as a minor leaguer and who's actually with the team still, right? And Panik's been a major leaguer for a few seasons now.
He's a fine big leaguer.
He
He's
is.
fine.
No, I'm not discounting how good Joe Panik is. I'm just saying they were willing to give up on Matt Duffy. They were willing to give up on a couple of other players, and I don't think
They
that's
were.
necessarily because they're just, they don't have faith in the players. I think it's that they would rather have other ones. I don't think giving up on Arroyo was a referendum on Arroyo. I think that's we have the opportunity to get Evan Longoria. Let's go get that guy.
That's fair. I will say though, giving up on Duffy so far has not looked like a mistake at all. I
Oh,
don't know if
gosh,
they
no.
knew. I don't know if they knew anything about him medically that the Rays didn't. But it's funny because the Rays have traded for what, like four? I guess it's closer to six Giant prospects since the deadline of 2016. The three they got from Matt Moore all were injured. And now with Arroyo, I know he had some injury issues of his own last year. It's just funny. It's like the Giants have one of their prospects get dinged, and the Rays start calling, like, "Hey, we might be interested in this guy." So,
And
I
then
don't know.
They've missed every time. It hasn't. Hopefully, Arroyo will be the change that they want. But
Be the
yeah, that's
change that you want to see. So we just have a few more to roll off real quick. I'll let you
really
handle
quick
this
hits on
one.
these guys.
Matt Dendecker is back with the Mets. What's
Nobody
your
cares.
okay?
Yeah, it's just funny that the Mets brought back another former Met, but the likelihood of him having anything to do with the major league team is very slim.
Yep, Drew Hutchinson to the Phillies. That's an interesting upside play if you still believe in Drew Hutchinson. He's still pretty young. I would have thought he
Yeah.
was at least 30. He's like 27, 28. So maybe, but probably not.
I could see him going into the bullpen and, being one of those pop-up guys.
That's a good call. Cliff Pennington to the Reds.
I like Cliff Pennington. I really want to see him pitch more. That's all I feel about that. Maybe he's taking the bullpen spot that Jeff Manship was going to have for that Reds team. But more than
Maybe
likely,
Brian
he's going to be AAA depth.
maybe Brian Price will allow Pennington to go multiple innings or do something Madden-like with him, like use him at shortstop or second base for a batter, then move him back onto the mound and, get fun with it. But I wouldn't
Probably
be
not.
surprised, probably not, but I wouldn't be surprised if he actually opens the season as their bench infielder. Him or Phil Gosselin, I think, makes the most sense for that team. And that's way too much time spent on Cliff Pennington. I apologize, folks. And then the last one we have is actually an old favorite of mine, Ryan Hennigan. Hannigan, excuse me. Wow, apparently he's not that much of a favorite of mine. Ryan Hannigan to the Indians. He has no chance of making this team unless there's an injury.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly why he's there, is injury replacement, because he's not gonna beat out Yan Gomes, he's not gonna beat out Roberto Perez for that catching position, and the Indians need another catcher behind those guys, like they need a hole in the head because Francisco Mejia exists. So, yeah, he is entirely there so that if Yan Gomes gets hit by a bus, then he can step in and not embarrass anyone.
They also have Erik Haase on their 40-man roster, and he's supposed to start the season in AAA. He's ranked 10th in their system by BP. So Hannigan's there, I think, to audition for a front office role with them after he's done playing, is my guess. Because
Yeah.
he's supposedly a intelligent guy, and maybe he's a future development guy. I don't know,
I
but
uh
yeah.
I I have it on good authority that once Ryan Hannigan was informed about one of my articles several years ago
Uh-oh.
and said it was a good comparison. I made a comparison between I think it was Tony Cingrani to Matt Moore, and Hannigan said, "Oh yeah, that sounds good. I've caught both those guys. I think that's a good comparison." And so forever, I'm going to be very, very on board Ryan Hannigan as anything because simply because of my ego.
I mean, that is a good comparison, though, in a sense. And Hannigan, I'm a sucker for these catchers. And if we're about at the point where I can plug something, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. See, Brian makes me wait until we've talked about all the minor moves before I get to plug anything. And people will probably be listening to this. They're not going to listen to this on the weekend. We're not that important to these people. So I'm going to guess Monday people will start listening to this. Well, on Tuesday, I will have something coming out on CBSSports.com/MLB. Concerning catchers and concerning catchers who don't really get much media attention for the most part, but are maybe cerebral, and that's about all I can probably say about that at this point. But yes, so there we go. That's my plug for the day. Brian, what do you want to plug?
I don't have much to plug. I've got some transaction analysis that should be going up either over the weekend on Monday. I talked about, wrote about most of these moves. So it's titled Something Old, which is Chase Utley. Something New, which is Eduardo Nunez. Something Borrowed, which is Andrew Cashner. And Something Blue, which is Jamie Garcia going to the Blue Jays. So yeah, I was really proud of that title, but the content is it is what you make of it. And then recently I've got something up at Short Relief about Jeff Manship in case you haven't gotten your Jeff Manship fix from me. So
That
that's
is tremendous headline. That's I think my favorite Sam headlines were either Rhymes with Longoria. That's when they brought Will Rhymes up to replace Longoria. Math is like as in math is for smart people when he wrote about Jeff Mathis. And what was the other one? Well, those are gonna have to do. And I once got fired from BP because of a headline I suggested, which was Ian's case of a Desmondes when he was going through
Oh,
that horrible, horrible, horrible stretch of defensive play one April. So
Oh wow, that's terrible. That's really, really bad. I'm very impressed.
yeah, so
That'll do
that'll.
it. That'll do it for today's episode of the DFA podcast. Find us on Twitter, email us, get in touch with us, and we'll see you guys next time.